Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the La Liga Lowdown podcast. Episode 23, would you believe, already of a new season. My name's Tom Harris, and I'm delighted to be joined once again by Paco Pollet to recap what's been an incredible midweek match day. Paco, jornada 10 already, over a quarter of the way through the season. How's it going, and what did you make of the midweek action?
It's actually going pretty fast, obviously, because of the World Cup break upcoming in the next in the following weeks. But I feel like it was just yesterday when we kickstarted everything on the last days of August, and now we already, you know, we've gone through the first quarter already of the competition, and yeah, I think we can get to quite a few conclusions already regarding the teams who are going to duke it out for the European places. Real Madrid, obviously, once again, the championship contenders in the top one seed, because they are, or at least they seem just too reliable, too confident, too strong. And I think that the scrap at the bottom is going to be mighty in the next month of May, because if you leave aside Elche, who haven't been able to turn things around under Jorge Almirón the first couple of games, the rest of them are still in the fight. You know, Cadiz are only one game away, one win away from getting out of the bottom three. Girona are on the same state. Getafe, Espanyol, Mallorca, all of them with 9 points. Sevilla, Almeria, Celta, all of them with 10 points. So we're talking about almost half of the table, the bottom half, who are all of them candidates for the relegation, and at the same time candidates to actually get out of it and be able to avoid the drop. So all in all, very interesting midweek match day with a couple of surprising results, a couple of expected results, and all in all, very interesting with quite a few spicy score lines and actually quite a few excellent goals on the road.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those excellent goals did actually come in those games between those sides that you were talking about. Almeria versus Girona, for example, we saw probably one of the best goals we're going to see in a very long time in La Liga. And also, I mean, this midweek as well, the penalties. I'm not sure what was going on in La Liga, but we had 7 over the last 3 days, 5 of them saved, and one of the best penalty records in La Liga history actually fell this weekend. We'll get onto all of that in part two. But to start today, our podcast, you know, we have to talk about the title race. Of course we do. It was completely shaken up by that 3-1 win for Real Madrid in the Clásico last weekend. But normal service resumed here for both clubs, really. And we'll start with Barcelona. A 3-0 win over Villarreal. And it was exactly what they needed, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, they polished the game very quickly. Thanks to Robert Lewandowski and Ansu Fati being absolutely on point. I think that it was only 7 or 8 minutes. They were able to score 3 quick goals, and it was done for Villarreal. It was lights out for them. And actually, Lewandowski's second goal is, or the first one, I don't remember. It's marvelous the way he turns around inside the box and he finishes. He is possibly my top one contender for the Golden Boot in La Liga, even though I might believe that it's not enough for Barca to be able to snatch the title from Real Madrid's hands. But yeah, overall, you have to always take into account the circumstances under which Villarreal played this game. They were, you know, in shock after what happened early on Thursday. We knew that José Manuel Llaneza, who is Villarreal's vice president, had passed away. I actually knew the man. He's possibly one of the best football men which the Valencian region has seen in the last 50 years. He was an absolutely proficient mastermind at, you know, turning things around in Villarreal and turn them from a small village side into a, you know, European champions in only 20 years. It's one of the most amazing feats we've seen, and it was really tragic news for Villarreal. By the way, who are going to rename their training ground with his name, Ciudad Deportiva José Manuel Llaneza, and who were, you know, shook by the news. And, you know, Barca took advantage not only about this circumstance, but by the fact that they needed the win. They needed to quickly turn things around after the disastrous results of last week, losing El Clásico, that draw against Inter, getting 99% knocked out of the Champions League group stage. So, yeah, Lewandowski was in charge of taking matters into his own hands. Two more goals for them, another brace for the Polish striker. Ansu Fati was a starter. Also Ferran Torres. I think Barca looked much better, especially at the back. And I won't obviously point fingers at Piqué or Eric Garcia, but I think you could see that Barca are much stronger, much confident with other players in that line of four. Busquets was also not playing as a starter. And all in all, Barca were flying in the first half. They were trying to make a statement, and they were able to finish the game quickly. So all in all, good news for them. And we'll have to see if they are able to, link another win next weekend, especially as they have the incredible challenge of being able to squeeze into that second place in the Champions League group stage, which, by the way, I think it's not going to happen.
Yeah, fitting tribute to José Manuel Llaneza there, Paco. Thank you very much for that. Of course, here at La Liga Lowdown, our hearts go out to his family, and indeed Villarreal as a whole, for the passing of one of Spanish football's greatest figures. He arrived at the club in 1994 and has overseen Villarreal's rise from obscurity to a La Liga team. And of course, he was there in Gdansk for the 2021 Europa League final. Many pictures of him lifting the trophy, and what a moment that would have been in his life and, of course, in the history of Villarreal Football Club. But, yeah, as you said, Paco, it was a very flat performance from Villarreal today, and reflective of the sadness that surely must have been felt around the club ahead of such a big game. And as ruthless as it was from Xavi's Barcelona, you can see that the players took full advantage. And it was interesting, Paco, that this was the first time that Gavi, Pedri and Ansu Fati have all started a game together at Camp Nou. And over 73,000 people were in attendance tonight, even after such a disappointing week.
On a Thursday, which is, and you know, a work day with people going to work early the following day, I think that's pretty impressive. And that speaks volumes about, you know, fans going back in droves to the Camp Nou, because I think that the kind of hopeness and ilusión, as we say in Spanish, is back to Barça, even though the first couple of months of competition haven't really brought good news to them, at least in European competitions.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the reasons why they're not enjoying themselves so much in La Liga is because of Real Madrid and how easy they're making it look at the moment. They travelled away to Elche, who admittedly are struggling defensively. We've seen them change coaches and Jorge Almirón has come in. But the way that Real Madrid were cutting through this Elche side, almost at will, they had three disallowed goals, and all three of the goals really were absolutely brilliantly worked 1-2 kind of, you know, movements through the centre of the defence, and Elche just could not get near them. And two of the disallowed goals for Karim Benzema, and a legal goal for Karim Benzema, fresh off the back of his Ballon d'Or win. Absolutely clinical, and yeah, it's looking quite ominous for the rest of La Liga, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't really look good for the rest of the championship contenders, because they just seem to be super confident, very strong, their physicality is absolutely on point. They have the drive, they have the pace, they have the resistance, the endurance. Overall, Fede Valverde is the guy who is able to put up a, you know, Real Madrid's face this season, or at least for the last run of games, has been so far Fede Valverde, and just the energy he exudes, and the confidence, and now he's scoring goals even. So I think everything is going in a positive way for Real Madrid. As you said, they were able to just slap around and thrash Elche effortlessly, and yeah, it was an easy win for them. And it could have been much, much worse for Elche, who, as you said, haven't been able really to, you know, to feel in a different way after sacking Francisco, bringing in once again Jorge Almirón. It's obvious it's very early, but I don't know. I wouldn't say it's too early, because managers who come mid-season are expected to at least drive something out of the players to try to extract more energy, more passion, whatever you might call it. But Elche so far haven't really showed anyone that they are paying attention to what Almirón is expecting from them.
We're just looking at the results now for Elche. That's 10 games still without win. Only 3 draws, so 3 points from their first 10 games. They travel to Espanyol next weekend in what could be an absolutely huge game.
As we say, una final. In match day 11 for both teams, both for Espanyol and for Elche, obviously.
Yeah, let's see what Josselu has to say for Espanyol. So sticking to the title race, you know, we're just talking about how impressive and clinical Real Madrid are. And then we move to their crosstown neighbours, Atletico Madrid, who, it's just very frustrating, isn't it? It seems to be one step forward and two steps back at the moment. They went ahead against Rayo Vallecano at the Civitas Metropolitano through really good work from Antoine Griezmann. We were talking about him on the last pod and saying how he's working really hard, he's getting the results, and it was him who nicked the ball back, crossed it into Alvaro Morata to score. But Rayo grew into the game, Atletico Madrid didn't kill it off, and eventually it was, you know, they were good value for their draw. And it was painful that it was Radamel Falcao of all players to score the equalising penalty.
Yeah, I think that's the ups and downs that we have been used to in the last couple of seasons from Atletico Madrid. If you want to make the metaphor or the comparison, if Real Madrid are looking clinical, you could say that Atleti's consistency is or has been inside the ER for quite a long time already, because they are just unable to string two consecutive good performances. I'm not talking about great ones, good ones. And that kind of you could say inability to capitalize on their potential ultimately, because they have better players than the opposition. You only have to check out the game against Rayo Vallecano. But Rayo Vallecano have that kind of grittiness, and obviously Radamel Falcao, who is always going to try to make a statement against any former team where he has played. But yeah, I think it was just another lost opportunity for Atletico Madrid, who have been stringing quite a lot of those lately, and ultimately they might pay both in the Champions League and getting knocked out of the title race as early as November, which would be dramatic for Atleti fans.
Just to back you up with some statistics there, Paco, Atletico Madrid have actually only managed to win 2 consecutive La Liga games this season on one occasion. So yeah, very stop-start for Atletico Madrid, for Diego Simeone, and very frustrating in this race for the European spots, especially when teams around them, like Real Sociedad, are winning 8 games in a row. It's the first time they've ever achieved 8 wins in a row in their 113-year history. So it's an absolutely massive achievement for them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're doing it without Alexander Isak, who they've sold, without Mikel Oyarzabal, who's been injured throughout this whole time.
Sadiq.
Yeah, Umar Sadiq as well, of course, who they brought in to replace Alexander Isak. They've not needed him, because the likes of Mikel Merino, who scored their winning goal here today, Bryce Mendes as well with another assist, another goal contribution for Real Sociedad. They just look so fluid, don't they?
Yeah, and also Take Kubo doing positive things for his team. Sorloth, who didn't score, but you know he has been massive in several games for Real Sociedad in this 8-win run. You know, overall they are looking very, very good. They are looking very good, and you have to always, you know, give credit to the manager, because he surely is one of the biggest responsible for this happening. And yeah, in this game against Mallorca, I'm always going to repeat myself so far with what I've seen in the first 10 games. Mallorca are underachieving if you look at their points, because I think they always do things to deserve more in most of their games, or at least in many games so far. But Real Sociedad were the ones in charge of trying to keep them afoot and trying to, you know, keep Ramiro once again adding another clean sheet to his resume. Very nice game by David Silva, by the way. Also Bryce Mendes, as you said, Ander Guevara at the back. I don't know. They are looking overall very confident. And the biggest question now is who is going to stop them? You know, who is going to be the one able to, after 8 games, to stop Real Sociedad on their tracks? Because their first couple of games were disappointing. They weren't the greatest, but you know, they took the opportunity of the Europa League, and instead of lamenting about the lost points in La Liga and lamenting about the fact that they were going to get worn down by European competitions, they took those games and propelled themselves forward with their wins. And that has allowed them to, you know, move on to the next round comfortably in the Europa League, and also climb up to the third spot. So well deserved by Real Sociedad. Nothing to say about them, just pure and unalterated praise on my behalf.
Interesting what you were saying about Mallorca there, Paco. I've just pulled up the expected goal stats for them for the past couple of weeks, and obviously they've been missing Vedat Muriqi, who is a huge miss for a club like Mallorca, not just for his finishing abilities, but for the nuisance that he is. You know, he barges about in that penalty area and creates all kinds of problems, and it's a big target for Mallorca to work towards. So obviously they're missing him, but if you look back to the 1-1 draw with Elche, so Mallorca 2.70 expected goals, Elche 0.33, and that was a 1-1 draw. Against Sevilla the week after, 1.41 expected goals for Mallorca, 0.18 for Sevilla, a 1-0 win for Sevilla.
You are not going to surprise me. None of those stats are going to catch me by surprise, because definitely I think that Mallorca should have at least 4 or 5 more points than now, because they have done and put in the work in order to achieve them, but that's the way football goes.
Well, let's hope for fans of Mallorca's sake that they'll be able to turn this around, and that, you know, the teams that we're going to talk about in part two aren't going to be the beneficiaries of this inability to put the ball in the back of the net. Thank you very much, Paco. We'll be back shortly after the ad breaks, when we are going to talk about the likes of Real Valladolid and their incredible performance against Celta Vigo, as well as Girona versus Almeria, and probably one of the best goals you're going to see in quite some time.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to part two of this La Liga Lowdown recap podcast. My name's Tom Harris and I'm once again here with Paco Pollitt.
Hello.
And we're going to move on to talk about some of the other games in La Liga this weekend.
Midweek.
There's too much football, Paco.
Don't worry. I think our listeners do really appreciate that we are, putting in the effort so late at night after such an amazing match day. So yeah, I think they can move on and you know think about that they didn't listen weekend. You did, guys, listen to midweek.
Yeah, midweek, everyone. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's impossible to keep up. I mean, especially with all the goals that have been flying in as well. But yeah, Paco, talking of goals, I bet if I would have asked you on Monday which side you thought were going to score the most this match day, you wouldn't have said Real Valladolid. But here we are, four goals in a magnificent 4-1 win over Celta Vigo in the pouring rain. The first time that Pucela scored four or more goals in a La Liga game in over 10 years. And Sergio León became the star of the show. He started the game on the bench, came on midway through the second half, scored, missed the penalty, and then scored again, all in the space of 5 minutes. Well, at the other end, Iago Aspas missed not one, but two penalties against Jordi Masip, who became the first player to save two Iago Aspas penalties in La Liga, having done so in the space of about a minute. And, you know, that's when you know it's not your day from a Celta Vigo perspective. Absolutely crazy game. Not sure how Celta lost it, given that they had 62% of the ball and 22 shots on goal. What happened, Paco?
I actually don't know. That's one of those games where you try to check out the game, make up your opinion, later check out the stats, and later check out the advanced stats. And yeah, you say some sort of, there's a correlation. But Celta had 22 shots, five of them only on target, one goal. Whereas for Valladolid had nine shots, seven of them on target, four goals. And you have to count there, obviously, that the penalty missed by Sergio León. I think it was a crazy game, especially the second half. When it rains in Pucela, it pours, you could say. And Valladolid fans always know that it's that kind of epicness for the... Pucela might be the equivalent to the can you make it on a cold, rainy Tuesday night in Stoke, And that's my metaphor for this game, because Zorrilla is more or less the kind of ground where big sides are able to both win and lose championships. But in Celta's case, as they are, mid-tier, mid-table, they are always capable of the best and the worst. This time they got the short end of the stick. And when the rain came and Sergio León went in there with his rowdiness and fight, and he scored the first, and 5 minutes later scored the second one, and then he got a pen and he missed the pen. The game was already off the rails. And that's why Celta could just try to, as we say in Spanish, capear el temporal, hide themselves from the storm, try to minimize the harm that they could get their way, because if the game had gone on for 15 or 20 more minutes, this game was a 6-2, 7-3 easy scoreline.
I think it was quite a good summary of Celta Vigo, really, because I was watching them, and when it was 1-1, I was thinking, wow, Celta Vigo might go on to win this. They're playing some really good stuff, and then complete and utter capitulation.
Absolutely off the mark. It was, they weren't accurate. The decision-making process, the last touch, the last finish, that was what Celta missed, not only on this game, but on several others being played already this season, and that's why they don't have more points so far.
Yeah, I mean, three defeats in a row now for Cudet's side. Next game against Getafe is going to be a big one for them to get back on track. Yeah. Talking about games with crazy penalties, we're going to go to your side now, Paco. And how did Valencia not win this game at Sevilla? A very, very painful miss in added time by Jose Luis Gaya with a penalty miss in the last second game.
Actually, it's a pity that, first, I'm so tired. Second, we have so little time to analyze this kind of stuff, because you could actually write a long, long text or a long, long rant on my behalf if you want about what is going on in Valencia this season. If you only get their first halves, they are possibly a Champions League contender. If you only watch their second halves, they are contenders for the drop, you know, relegation zone side. That's what's happening with Valencia. And that was just another example of this kind of inconsistency, being just unable to have the maturity, the experience to hold on to the game instead of letting go, as I said earlier, off the rails. And Sevilla, who were dead by halftime, they resurrected in the second one. Obviously, the subs were going to come in, but Valencia's lack of experience is dragging them down, and that's why they don't have more points. So, all in all, I have to say it was a fair result, because at the end of the day, Sevilla deserved more in the second half. Mamardashvili was once again, one of Valencia's important men, and Gaya had the chance of winning it, and he missed. Unfortunately for him, but fortunately for the fans, it doesn't matter because he has already extended his contract till 2027. So, we had a disappointment, but we are going to have many chances for Gaya to score, both from the penalty spot and from other spots on the pitch.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a very, very interesting move for José Luis Gaya. I also, watching this game, was impressed once again with Edinson Cavani, I've got to say. I mean, he looks dangerous whenever the ball comes in for Valencia. Mm. It's just his mere presence.
And the experience, Tom, that's what I was talking about earlier. Whenever Cavani is, plucked out of the ground, of the pitch, that's when Valencia start spiraling out of control and being dominated by the opposition. Cavani is not only the goal scorer, he's possibly Valencia's biggest experience item. And that's why they have to play him as much as possible. And that's why his 35-year-old physique is hurting or struggling in this first stretch of games. Remember, he has been like 6 months without playing an official game. And he's coming around. He's slowly getting there. Yet another goal for Edinson Cavani. What an amazing cross by Fulquier. My God, I have to say that. Because we know that he's not his biggest asset, his crosses. So, yeah, all in all, interesting game. And Sampaoli remains unbeaten so far, but he doesn't win. So I understand Sevilla fans who are angry.
Yeah, he does remain unbeaten, but that is actually the seventh game in a row at the Ramon Sanchez-Pizjuan that Sevilla have failed to win. And that is the longest streak they have ever been on.
A long one, yeah.
Longest streak they have ever, ever been on in their whole history at the Ramon Sanchez-Pizjuan. So they need to sort that out next time out against Rayo Vallecano. Before then, they have a game away at the Santiago Bernabeu, so we'll see how that one goes. But moving on to another incredible game, Almeria 3, Girona 2. Don't know how it ended 3-2 because there was a disallowed goal in the dying seconds for Girona. Yangel Herrera, very, very controversial decision.
Very close.
I'm going to go out on record and say that I don't think it should have been disallowed. I think this game should have been 3-3. But nonetheless, we look at Almeria and we were talking about them a couple of weeks ago, Paco, when Umar Sadiq left. And
yeah,
I think their average, their expected goals per game dropped from about 1.5 to 0.3 in the games before and after he left. So they clearly lost a lot of attacking firepower. But that's the second time in a row at the Powerhall Stadium. They've gone 3-0 up at halftime. Mm-hmm. They very nearly let it slip today, but I think Adrián Imbarba and Gonzalo Melero are looking good for them.
Yeah, please, plenty of tension for Almeria fans after having the game absolutely won with that Embarba screamer from outside the box, which was, I have to say that the keeper wasn't really in his best shape, even though the goal was amazing. But yeah, that's always a sliver of doubt. But yeah, they had the game won, and suddenly they fell off the horse, and Girona scored, and then scored another one, and they had the chance to level the game, and the referee said that it was a foul over the keeper. So overall, interesting game between two sides who are destined and doomed to struggle this season, even though in several games they have shown that they have quality to be like easily mid-table sides. But La Liga requires much more than that. It requires consistency. And that's what Almeria, both Almeria and Girona, haven't shown to date.
Yeah, of course. I mean, just watching this game, I know it's easy to see because Almeria won it, but I was certainly more impressed with Almeria than I was Girona. I think it's five games now without a win for Girona, and you mm-hmm. look how well they played in some of those games they've lost. Obviously, they played Real Betis and Real Madrid and Real Sociedad at 5-3 defeat. Atletico Madrid, but, you know, they're just not able to turn these performances into wins. And when they don't play well, as they didn't really today in the first half, they're going to lose as well. So they really, really need to turn this around. As we said, Adrien Mbanabai must have been 40 yards out, an absolutely incredible goal. And Christian Stuani missed the penalty for the first time ever in La Liga. His record before this miss was 17 out of 17. And he
missed. It was long due, you know, it had to come someday.
But he missed one and then got one 2 minutes later and scored that one. So he made up for it instantly. But obviously they both would have gone in and it might have been 3-3. So again, another topsy-turvy game. And yeah, definitely recommend looking at the highlights on YouTube for that one to see that Mbanabai goal. So three more games to go. I don't think we're going to have time to squeeze them all in, but we're going to have to talk quickly about Getafe versus Athletic Club. Mm-hmm. 2-2 in the end. And obviously we've been talking a lot about Ernesto Valverde and Athletic Club. It's another slip up for them. That's three games now that they've failed to win. But there were definitely some good signs. And I think, you know, looking at the goals that they did concede, I think it was more down to individual mistakes than you know, problems with the formation and with the performance. Would you agree?
Yeah, whenever you are able to put place yourself 2-1 away from home, you have to, you know, tie the knot on the game and take it home. If you are unable to do so, it's because you are lacking something. I don't know if it's experience, dominating the tempo of the game, but yeah, I think that Athletic have, you know, it's a bump on the road. They are playing against Barca next weekend. And it's going to be tricky for them. But yeah, overall, I think that they were trying, in Getafe's case, trying to get out of the pit, trying to bounce back after each blow. And I have to commend to some extent what Quique Sánchez-Flores and his side have been doing, because it's tough to get out of there, you know. And if you check out the latest results, they have always tried different things and try to, you know, get something positive. But four games without a win, and that might drag them, because it's only a handful of games before the break, and we know that those 6 weeks without football can get very, very long if you are in the relegation zone when the time comes.
Yeah, 100%. And for Athletic Club as well, you know, we were saying that it's been a couple of games without a win for them, and the way other teams in and around them are going, these points could be costly come towards the end of the season. Another team in and amongst the fight are Osasuna. They finally won again. They back to El Sadar, and it was a very comfortable 1-0 win over Espanyol in the end, because Espanyol offered very little and Osasuna really suffocated them and kept them out of the game.
Yeah, Budimir was the one in charge of scoring that goal, and you know, Joselu didn't score, which is news. We have to say that to some extent. But yeah, Espanyol are one of those unreliable sides that you cannot really analyze every single week, because they are capable of the best and of the worst. Whereas for Osasuna, finally were able to win once again and turn around their luck after a string of games which wasn't really that positive for them. It was four games without a win. And yeah, ultimately they are once again in the European race, 7th, 16 points, only two away from Athletic Club, who are on the sixth place.
Yeah, exactly. You've got Betis, you've got Osasuna, you've got Villarreal, you've got Athletic Club. It's going to be out there in Sevilla. If they make a recovery in the Jorge Sampaoli, it's going to be an absolutely fascinating race for those Conference League and Europa League spaces. So that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much, Paco, for joining me on this podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tom.
And obviously make sure to check out our Twitter, to follow us on Twitter at La Liga Lowdown, where you'll see lots more reaction to the midweek results. Also to follow our Substack at laligalowdown.substack.com. And we'll be back with a fresh newsletter tomorrow morning and a fresh podcast on Monday. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.